VOA News, I'm Tommy McNeil. A new report by the United Nations shows to the Security Council claims that North Korea is working to ensure its weapons cannot be destroyed by military strikes. VOA's Steve Miller reports.
The announcement by UN monitors comes ahead of a meeting between U.S. Special Envoy for North Korea Stephen Biegun and his North Korean counterpart in preparation for a second denuclearization summit. The UN report found evidence of North Korea using civilian facilities, including airports, for ballistic missile assembly and testing with the goal of effectively preventing decapitation strikes. U.S. President Donald Trump has hailed tremendous progress in his dealings with North Korea and set the date for his second summit with Kim Jong-un for February 27th and 28th in Vietnam. Steve Miller, VOA News, Seoul.
U.S. allies have given a cautious welcome to the announcement of a second summit between President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un to be held later this month. The planned meeting was a major foreign policy announcement in President Trump's State of the Union address, AP's Charles de Ledesma.
After dramatically asserting that if he hadn't been elected president, America and North Korea would be fighting a major war now, Donald Trump has acknowledged much work remains to be done in talks. That's quite a shift from the claim right after his June summit with Kim that the nuclear threat from the North was over. The president's tune changed in other ways as well. For example, the word denuclearization was nowhere to be found. Analysts think keeping a lot of wiggle room is a smart move. Intelligence chiefs believe there is little likelihood Kim will voluntarily give up his nuclear weapons or missiles capable of carrying them. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
U.S. lawmakers working to avert another partial government shutdown emerged from a closed-door meeting Wednesday, asserting that an agreement on border security can be reached in the coming days, but indicated that partisan differences remain on specific elements of a potential deal. The bipartisan bicameral conference committee tasked with crafting a plan to boost U.S. border security before federal funding expires on February 15th. This is VOA News. Foreign ministers and senior officials from the U.S.-led anti-Islamic State coalition have been meeting in Washington to develop plans to respond to President Trump's decision to withdraw American forces from Syria. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said it's no time to let up on ISIS.
We must recommit ourselves to the goal of permanently defeating ISIS. For our victory to be final and enduring, ISIS must no longer pose a threat to our respective homelands or function as a global network. There must be no more safe haven from which it can operate.
The meeting is being held at the State Department. Some countries are also worried that the U.S. troop departure could endanger gains that have swept ISIS from more than 99% of the territory it once held in Iraq and Syria. U.S. officials have repeatedly warned of Iran's destabilizing activities in Syria and across the Middle East, but officials from Baghdad maintain the U.S. military presence in Iraq is a result of an agreement to combat terrorism and that keeping an eye on Tehran is not part of the deal. President Trump says that Treasury Department official David Malpass is his choice to lead the World Bank. Trump introduced Malpass on Wednesday as the right person to take on this incredibly important job. Malpass says that he's honored by the nomination. He says a key goal will be to implement changes to the bank that he and Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin helped negotiate, and to ensure that women achieve full participation in developing economies. Malpass would succeed the Jim Yong Kim, who departed in January, 3 years before his term was set to end. Other candidates will likely be nominated for the post by the bank's member countries. A final decision on a new president will be up to the bank's board. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is now accusing Washington of imperialism in its efforts to oust Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. Erdogan's latest verbal salvo in support of his ally Maduro comes amid growing U.S. pressure on Ankara to end support for the beleaguered Venezuelan leader. With both Washington and the European Union recognizing Venezuelan opposition leader Juan Guaido as the interim president, Erdogan's strong backing of Maduro puts him on a collision course with his Western allies. Maduro's opponents accuse him of undermining democracy and presiding over skyrocketing inflation and a collapsing economy. Ankara's support of Maduro extends far beyond rhetoric. Turkey is processing large amounts of Venezuela gold. Last year, Caracas exported nearly $900 million worth of gold to Turkey. The trade provides Maduro with a vital source of revenue in the face of a tightening international sanction. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
America. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today's Thursday, February 7th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Cameroon separatists say they welcome a reported cut in U.S. military assistance to President Paul Biya's government.
What the U.S. has done, it came a little bit late, but we appreciate it. And we hope that every European nation, including Canada, will follow suit.
Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication of the self-proclaimed Ambazonian Separatists of Cameroon. Meanwhile, Cameroonian troops say they free hostages held by CAR rebels. The EU sees some progress in the implementation of South Sudan's revitalized peace agreement. And Zimbabwe's opposition leader was a no-show yesterday at a national dialogue with President Mnangagwa.
We are putting the people of Zimbabwe first because what the president is refusing to do is to discuss issues of political stability, the deployment of the military, and the arrest of citizens using extra-legal means.
Nkululeko Sibanda is the spokesman for Zimbabwe opposition leader Nelson Chamisa. Laotin Brown hosts a conference of African female investors in Cape Verde, and Operation Rescue airlifts baby flamingos in South Africa. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A spokesman for Cameroon's self-proclaimed Ambazonian separatist movement is calling on European Union countries and Canada to follow the example of the United States and cut aid to the government of President Paul Biya. Chris Anu, the Secretary of State for Communication of the Ambazonian separatist movement, says failure to do so would give President Paul Biya a green light to decimate southern Cameroon. His comments came after it was reported Wednesday that the U.S. had cut, U.S. government was cutting about $17 million in military aid to Cameroon because of that country's alleged human rights abuses. Chris Anu says the U.S. action reaffirms what the separatists have been trying to educate the international community about since the start of the uprising in Anglophone Cameroon.
Since 2016, French Cameroon has been perpetrating genocide on the people of the southern Cameroons. As of today, soldiers go into the university campus and they abduct students, take them away. In another market square, they randomly shoot close to 30 young men who were doing nothing. They had no guns. They were not Ambazonian fighters. They were randomly shot down. You have whole towns and villages having burnt down by Cameroon soldiers. What the U.S. has done, it came a little bit late, but we appreciate it. And we hope that every European nation, including Canada, will follow suit. Because if that is not done, the regime in French Cameroon will decimate everything that is the southern Cameroon before the world comes to know about it.
But Chris, the allegation that some people have made is that the violence or the human rights abuses are occurring on both sides.
Well, that is not true, because when you declare war on a people, the people have the right to defend themselves. When you come to my house to attack me, I have the right to defend myself. And if I can kill you first, I will do it. That is exactly what Ambazonians are doing. They are defending themselves. They did not call for war. There were no arms on the streets of Ambazonia until Paul Biya called or declared war. There was no army in Ambazonia until Paul Biya declared war. Our fighters, they are defending our parents, our brothers, our sisters, and our territory. We have no choice. We didn't bring this upon ourselves. French Cameroon did.
I spoke with an envoy from the church group in Cameroon who have tried to organize this all-Anglophone conference. He is here traveling the diaspora to hear views from the diaspora so that the views will be presented to President Paul Biya to determine the way forward for the country. Have you had a chance to meet with Ellis?
I have not personally met with Ellis Smith. But I am aware of the meeting that he attended here with some other comrades from this interim government and some other groups in this liberation struggle. What I can say is Amazonians look forward to sitting on the negotiation table to resolve this crisis, every conflict, every war ends on a negotiation table. So what Eli Smith is good, is appreciated. We welcome him. We met with him. We spoke with him. What we would not like to see is, as you say it, put it, him taking anything to Paul Biya to decide this conflict on his terms. That is not going to happen.
Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication of the Ambazonian Separatist Movement of Cameroon. He was speaking with me from the U.S. city of Houston in Texas. Cameroonian officials were not immediately available to comment. Cameroonian troops have been deployed to the country's border with the Central African Republic, or CAR, following kidnappings of Cameroonian villagers by armed groups from the CAR. Moki Edwin Kizeka interviews some former hostages and filed this report.
Une force spéciale, une unité spéciale, ça veut dire que les actions fortes.
Colonel Minabu Abubakar gives orders to 50 members of Cameroon's National Gendarmerie. He tells them that on the instruction of Cameroon's President Paul Biya, they are to leave the town of Belel, where they are stationed, and take up posts along the border to prevent armed gangs from entering the country.
The head of state, commander-in-chief of the armed forces, has said the phenomenon of stage-taking with ransom asking must stop. And all personal means, logistic means, have been deployed to attain that objective, and it will be achieved.
On a Wednesday morning at 4 a.m., the troops returned to Cameroon with 45-year-old farmer Muhammadu Hidi, who had been abducted. Hidi says the troops found him stranded on the border with the CAR, looking for a way back to his home. Hidi says his family paid $10,000 before he was released after 19 days as a hostage inside the CAR with chains on his hands and legs. Cameroon's government says at least 130 people have returned to their homes about 2 weeks after the troops were deployed, and several armed men suspected to be CAR rebels have been neutralized. The government says dozens of others have fled over the border into the CAR. Belair resident Abdul Nana says his wish is for peace to return. Nana says if insecurity continued in the town and surrounding villages, it would be because armed gangs bribed local officials.
On insiste sur la complicité. Vous voyez aussi le fait qu'on arrête.
He says some CAR fighters and their Cameroonian accomplices regain freedom as soon as they are caught and taken to administrative officials, suggesting that they either bribe their way through or simply collaborate with some administrators. He says at times, the military fails to search suspicious vehicles that cross the border. Cameroon's Minister of Territorial Administration, Paul Atanganji, who visited the villages this week to encourage the population to return, says he is happy with the work done by the militias and troops. He says anyone caught assisting the invaders are terrorists.
I told them that they must take the engagement in the fight against terrorism. They have to be part of this business. You cannot be with the government and you are with the terrorists.
As peace returns to Cameroon border towns and villages, residents across the border in the CAR say they are yet to find peace. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Belair, Cameroon.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Thursday, February 7th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 14 and a half minutes past the hour. The leader of Zimbabwe's opposition movement for democratic change, MDC, was a no-show yesterday at a national summit with President Emmerson Mnangagwa. The president said he had invited the leaders of all political parties to come together without preconditions Nations to begin a process of national dialogue, but MDC leader Nelson Chamisa refused to attend, saying while he favors a dialogue, he would only attend talks if they are called by a neutral party. Nkululeko Sibanda, spokesman for Nelson Chamisa, says Mr. Chamisa needs a genuine dialogue facilitated by a credible convener and mediator.
What happened is that Mr. Mnangagwa wrote a letter yesterday requesting about 23 members of different political parties and individuals who participated in the presidential election, demanding that there be a meeting at his residency. That very short notice, it was very difficult for us to even decide how that would happen. But be that as it may, we then tasked a team to look at what the agenda was. So we established that the agenda had nothing to do with the five key issues that President Chamisa is interested in, that is resolving the impasse around the election results and the legitimacy question, looking at the economy, looking at the constitution, looking at some of our independent bodies and strengthening our local authorities. Now, that agenda was completely thrown out. They didn't have that agenda. And they also didn't have an independent umpire or facilitator, which is very important. One of the subjects we want to discuss is the legitimacy of the presidency of the country.
As the president said, you, the opposition, and the government should put the people of Zimbabwe first.
We are putting the people of Zimbabwe first because what the president is refusing to do is to discuss issues of political stability, the deployment of the military and the arrest of citizens using extra legal means. And those issues are pertinent to President Chamisa because that worries him more than anything else. And he wants those issues resolved. He says, look, if we're going to talk, get the soldiers off the streets. Let the police do their jobs, but the soldiers should be off the streets.
Again, when you say that you need genuine dialogue, does this mean that you want an international intervention, somebody from the African Union, from SADC, to be the convener or the mediator?
It would be great to have somebody who's not partisan in the discussions, but that is not the demand here. We're not making any demands. This is the norm. This is what is always done. We had a national dialogue in 2008, and it went in that direction. We had to have discussions that were facilitated by independent and neutral individuals, especially in this case where the presidential result itself is under question. However, it must be clear also that when you then look at what they discussed today, they discussed nothing substantive when they weren't, because the meeting did go ahead with about 12 people in attendance out of a potential 24. And what then you clearly can see is that they simply went there for opportunities to take pictures, and they were lectured to by Mr. Mnangagwa. That is not what President Chamisa would want to do. That is not what the people of Zimbabwe would want to see happening. The people of Zimbabwe want to see politicians and President Chamisa worrying more about their plight other than a photo opportunity with President Mnangagwa, especially after the murder of citizens.
Nkululeko Sibanda is the spokesman for Zimbabwe opposition leader Nelson Chamisa. He spoke with me from the capital, Harare. The European Union says there are some progress in the implementation of the revitalized peace deal. The head of the EU delegation to South Sudan says there are positive changes across the country compared to 12 months ago. Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Ambassador Sinet Wells says the EU is encouraged by the progress being made by South Sudan's former warring parties in implementing the peace agreement. Wells tells South Sudan in Focus that several political and security meetings held between the parties gives civilians more confidence that the deal will be fully implemented.
If you look around the country, since September, but maybe even more since November, you've had all sorts of local level agreements where they say, okay, and we will set up an agreement that basically says that, you know, people can move freely, we'll try and increase humanitarian access. And we've seen that this is actually leading to more freedom of movement for civilians and more confidence of civilians.
But Wells says more consensus must be reached between the parties on implementing some of the security arrangements and on tougher issues like the number of states and their boundaries.
We need more momentum. We need to be moving, I think, more quickly through some of the issues. You know, I say that knowing that they're really quite difficult, but maybe there needs to be some reflection on the deadlines. We know that the pre-transitional period is supposed to do A, B, and C. We're more or less halfway now through the pre-transitional period, and we are behind schedules.
Wells is urging peace mediators and the Intergovernmental Authority on Development to ensure that the parties adhere to the deadlines stipulated in the implementation matrix. And as he says, South Sudanese leaders should see implementing the peace agreement as an opportunity to resolve the country's bigger challenges and to move beyond its painful past.
This is a really historic opportunity. You know, this is the time we must get this right in all of our different capacities. We all have an opportunity to grasp this peace agreement and to run with it and to really put an end to, a lot of the tragic events that have happened over the last number of years in South Sudan.
The former Irish ambassador to Sierra Leone and Liberia says the European Union supports the peace agreement and wants to see it succeed. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Toki Lauten Brown is an Irish architect with Nigerian roots who has her sights set on developing Cape Verde with the help of other African women. Lauten Brown is hosting a conference of African female investors in the country's main island of Santiago in March so that they can together put their money and invest in local businesses. She talks to Ricky Stryak about their plans.
Oh, the reasoning behind that is not enough African women or women of African descent invest in anything, really. So I was looking for projects that were not too harsh on the pocket, that where I gather women together and invest in one project and make it work. And I wanted something different because I've attended fairs, I've attended investment fairs, and just go in, you look at what's happening and you leave. And that's it. Maybe if you feel attuned to something, then you will go back and say, oh, okay, I liked that investment, I will probably do that. But whenever I go to all these fairs, I never really see that much women of African descent.
What I think is interesting, too, is that on the ground level, on the micro level, at the community level in Africa, women are the ones investing in, the agriculture. If it's not money, it's their time and it's their labor.
That is so true.
But that kind of stuff has smaller returns for them, I think. And so this could they actually shift the power and the economic dynamic a bit.
Exactly. And I was looking to change all of that. And I don't know why 50 always resonates with me, but I just felt, okay, 50 women, So if 50 women bring in €500 minimum, we can go somewhere with that. With 25,000, we can actually invest in something.
It's cool because it's like a tontine, bigger version of what they do at the village level.
Yes, exactly. And just so that it's less risky and it's shared. We share the value, we share the risk, we share the profits as well. But it also gets women interested in working together.
Increasing their economic power, I'm guessing, which leads to more power in general and social issues and things like that.
Exactly.
What kind of geographic range do you have so far for people joining?
So I have women coming from South Africa, from the Congo, from Nigeria, and women of African descent from the States, from the UK, from Ireland.
What are you building there and how is it? You called it African Infused Designs. I'd love to know more about that.
So we acquired a site in Praia where we had a meeting with the community to decide on what will be on the site. And so we sat down and we discussed what were the pressing issues. So the pressing issues were there were no activities happening really on the site. And so we teased the ideas of having a sports academy because they love sports there and including that on the site. So we'll have schools, we'll have secondary school, primary school, medical facilities, and then we'll have the residential part.
That was Toki Lauerton-Brown, an architect and developer. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Ireland. A special airlift for thousands of baby flamingos is underway in South Africa as drought puts their breeding ground in peril. Viewer's Mariama Diallo reports.
A reservoir that hosts one of Southern Africa's largest flamingo populations is drying up. The site is littered with the bodies of hundreds of dead chicks. A rescue operation is being organized by local groups along with environmental authorities.
We need to put the effort into the strong ones. They are the most important ones, as we need to transport them as well.
The heat is causing the flamingo eggs to lose their moist protective cover. And with their inner membranes hardening, it's difficult for chicks to peck their way out. Many of the exhausted birds that emerge don't survive long.
Our day starts now at 4. We started with the feeding. It lasts out about an hour. In between, we need to monitor all the birds. We might need to prepare the food. We need to make sure everything is clean. The birds are still safe.
Unfortunately, the future doesn't look bright, says South Africa's Department of Environment.
Our biggest worry is that if we don't get the rainfall this week, the mothers who are sitting with their chicks may abandon the chicks and fly over somewhere. And if that happens, we'll have more than 3,000 chicks to deal with, and that could be a disaster.
Local diamond mines paid for an emergency flight to carry the first batch of 900 chicks to Pretoria, some 550 kilometers away. They landed in Mike Bolthuis's home. He turned his private residence into a temporary makeshift facility. He says returning the chicks to the wild presents several challenges.
The big problem and the second phase challenge is once they can eat themselves is to try and not have a further human imprintation on them. The human imprint is the biggest problem if you want to later reintegrate these birds into flamingo flocks or colonies.
Finding the just right spot will also be critical.
Once they are juveniles and they can eat themselves, you can put them at those dams, but there must be the correct mud and ground so they can make the nests.
Rescue organizers say chicks will likely spend 3 or 4 months rehabilitating at various sites before they are released back into the wild. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A spokesman for Cameroon's self-proclaimed Amazonia separatist movement is calling on European Union countries and Canada to follow the example of the United States and cut aid to the government of President Paul Biya. Chris Anu, the Secretary of State for Communication of the Amazonia Separatist Movement, says failure to do so would give President Paul Biya a green light to decimate southern Cameroon. His comments came after it was reported Wednesday that the U.S. government was cutting about $17 million in military aid to Cameroon because of that country's alleged human rights abuses. Chris Anu says the U.S. action reaffirms what the separatists have been trying to educate the international community about since the start of the uprising in Anglophone Cameroon. The leader of Zimbabwe's opposition movement for democratic change was a no-show yesterday at a national summit with President Emmerson Mnangagwa. The president said he had invited the leaders of all political parties to come together without preconditions to begin a process of national dialogue. But MDC leader Nelson Chamisa refused to attend, saying while he favors a dialogue, he would only attend talks if they are called by a neutral party. And that is it for this Thursday, February 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clarty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Next up, why do U.S. intelligence chiefs and U.S. President Donald Trump differ on threats emanating from North Korea, Iran, Russia, and the so-called Islamic State? What foreign policy issues did Mr. Trump highlight in his annual State of the Union address? We'll talk about the politics and substance of U.S. national security next on Encounter, this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Nigeria's presidential election is set for February 16th. President Muhammadu Buhari of the APC and top challenger Atiku Abubakar of the PDPs are both Fulani Muslims. A discussion on what's at stake on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.